The meeting open at 9:32 a.m. Thank you. Okay, first of all, I'd like to acknowledge the Kondamuka people, who are the traditional custodians of the land in which we meet. I'd also like to pay respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to other Indigenous Australians who are present. Public conduct at meetings. All members of the public present at a meeting, all members of the public present at a meeting must A, not without the prior approval of the chairperson, make any audio or video recording or take any photographs. B, remain quiet and not disrupt the meeting in any way. C, not bring into the meeting any signs, placards or items that may cause a hazard or interfere with any person present. D, be suitably dressed. And E, turn all mobile devices to silent mode and leave the meeting to take any calls. As chairperson, it is my responsibility to warn a member of the public present at a meeting who is not complying with any of these requirements and may, with or without such warning, require the person to leave the meeting and not return for such a period as the chairperson decides. This period may include future meetings. Okay, we have a couple of councillors absent this morning. First, can I please have a mover that permission be granted to Councillor Gleeson to take part of the general meeting by teleconference? Moved Councillor Baglari, seconded by Councillor Edwards. All in favour? Motion is carried unanimously. Councillor Elliott is absent from the meeting. I also have a leave of absence from the Mayor, attending an LGAQ conference in Palm Island. Could I have a mover and a seconder that a leave of absence is granted for Mayor Karen Williams? Move Peter Mitchell, second Councillor Baglari. Those in favour? Carried unanimously.
Aye.
Carried unanimously. Thank you, Councillor Gleeson. Carried unanimously. Councillor Elliott is absent from the meeting. It's now my pleasure to introduce Pastor Sam Toms from Victoria Point Baptist Church, who will lead us now in a devotional segment. Thank you, Pastor.
Good morning. A worldwide survey was conducted by the UN. The only question asked was, would you please give your honest opinion about solutions to the food shortage in the rest of the world? The survey was a huge failure. In Africa, they didn't know what food meant. In Eastern Europe, they didn't know what honest meant. In Western Europe, they didn't know what shortage meant. In Asia, they didn't know what opinion meant. In the Middle East, they didn't know what solution meant. In South America, they didn't know what please meant. And in the USA, they didn't know what the rest of the world meant. I don't envy your jobs as councillors and decision makers and juggling lots of really hard decisions to be made. My name's Sam. I'm a pastor at Vicky Point Baptist Church, and it's possibly my first and last appearance here, starting with a joke. So I just really, real privileged being here. I moved up here from the Gold Coast a couple of years ago, and I ran a company down there, a floor polishing company, for 9 years. And although I'm probably the least qualified in the room to be discussing business politics or business principles, one thing that I learnt a lot about is the value of people. And when I started the company, was very big on procedures and protocols and processes, and not a lot about the value of people. And struggled with the company. And as I started to grow in business and learn about the importance of people, the company started to change and grow. And it's as a pastor, I reflect a lot on the life of Jesus. And Jesus had a very similar view that people mattered. He held people in high regard. It's interesting that, however, after three years of active ministry, Jesus hadn't really accomplished anything. He had amassed no great army. He hadn't started any rebellion. He had little to anything to show for it. He avoided political conflict. He refused to engage in the political world. He denied promotion, and he died with sort of nothing really showing. But the fruit of his ministry became out of his investment in people. He changed their worldview. he had added the value of human dignity, where in the Roman culture at the time, people were held in little regard. And when he left, he had challenged that position to the highest level. And he had raised the moral compass so high that no one in recorded history has set morality as high as what Jesus said when he turned to his disciples and said to them to love their enemy, which is rather profound and unique. Debatably, he's recognized worldwide as the most influential person of all time because he valued people. He valued people over tradition, rules, and procedures. I'd just like to read from Matthew 12, verse 9 to 13. Going on from that place, he went into their synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, they asked him, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?" He said to them, "If any of you has a sheep and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will you not take hold of it and lift it out? How much more valuable is a man than a sheep? Therefore, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath." Then he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." So he stretched it out, and it was completely healed, just as sound as the other. Jesus reminds us of the value of people. It was forbidden by law to do work on the Sabbath, yet Jesus saw a higher law of love and a person's true value, which he held to. As a pastor, in the last few months, I've been very busy organizing, planning, and strategizing, and have lost a bit of that perspective of the value of human life. And been so focused on getting things done that I've sort of missed the people behind it. And so I just wanted to share that this morning and encourage you guys to continue to lift up the value of the person and involve your dealings and tradings and decision makings to continue to see the people behind it, as I know you do. And I'd love to just pray for you, if that's all right. Heavenly Father, Lord, I just pray for this group of counselors, Lord. I pray for wisdom for them. I pray for discernment for them, that they might make right decisions, Lord, not based on popularity, Lord, but make decisions that will best serve the people, Lord Jesus. I pray for their families, Lord. I pray you bless each family that's represented here, and you pray for their finances and their health, Lord. I just really thank you for their sacrifice and willingness to serve in this position, Lord. I also pray for the tension between administration and people, that of getting things done and valuing people, Lord, and it's a hard tension to hold, but I just pray for your wisdom in as they to go about this duty, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you, Pastor Simon. Thank you for that special prayer for us. Thank you, councillors. I also forgot to mention earlier that there are audio devices in the North and South Stradbroke room, so there can be other people watching this meeting from outside the gallery. Hey. Some people may like space around them, Councillor Talbot. Okay. Councillors are reminded of the responsibilities in relation to a councillor's material personal interest and conflict of interest at a meeting. The details, see Division 5A of the Local Government Act 2009 in appendix to the running sheet. Details of these responsibilities are also outlined in the agenda. I would also remind you that declarations can be made at any time throughout the meeting. Now we have, going on to part 5, recognition of achievement. I believe Councillor Bishop has something to say about the Seniors Week. Thank you, Councillor.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Just acknowledging for recognition of achievement, the councillors all attended a gathering at Nandeebi earlier this week just to acknowledge some incredible seniors who, through a relationship between Redland City Council and Blue Care, just took a moment to just acknowledge the work that so many people during this Seniors Week have done across the history of the years in Redland City. I won't go into detail about those people, but I just think as a recognition of achievement, there are so many seniors who have committed so much time. It's great that we have Seniors Week and RD Coda raising awareness about the amazing things that people can do in this wonderful city, and we just recognised some of them the other day. Also like to acknowledge Redland City Bulletin. The journalist Hannah was there and did a story about that. So people will be able to find those details. I just think it's worthwhile us recognising the achievement of those 12 seniors, but just supported by Council and Blue Care. Thank you very much, that's all.
Thank you, Councillor Wishfield. It's certainly an amazing resort in Assad and our city, our seniors. Moving on to item 6, may I have a mover and a second that the minutes of the general meeting held on 8th of August 2018 be confirmed? Move Councillor Mitchell, second Councillor Edwards. Are there any comments on the correctness of the minutes? Okay, having said that, all in favour? Carried unanimously.
Aye.
Thank you. Now we go to matters outstanding of the previous general meeting. Acting CEO to present matters outstanding from the previous general minutes. Thank you, Mr. O.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. There are two. The first is a petition requesting that a community reference group be formed to assist Council to plan for future use of Commonwealth land at Birkdale. At Council's general meeting on 6 June 2018, they resolved as follows: that the petition be received and referred to the Chief Executive Officer for consideration and a report to the local government. I can advise that a report will be prepared to a future meeting of Council. So officers are still working on that, but it is imminent. The second relates to the Koala Conservation Action Plan 2016-2021 Delivery Program and the 2018-19 financial year. The Council had previously resolved that this matter lie on the table. Today will be that this matter will be removed from the table and discussed at item 13.3 on today's agenda. Amendments have been made to the report to further highlight Council's partnerships with external stakeholders, and these amendments have been made clear in the report and will be discussed accordingly.
Thank you, Mr. CEO. Now onto item 8, public participation. In accordance with S31 of Policy 3127, Council Meeting Standing Orders, a period of 15 minutes may be made available by resolution to permit members of the public to address the local government on matters of public interest relating to the local government. Priority will be given to members of the public who have made written application to do so. I don't have any written application. Is there anyone in the gallery that wishes to speak today? Okay. There appears to be none, so we can move directly on to item 9, which is petitions and presentations, which I believe you have a petition for us, Councillor Edwards.
Yes, I do. Thank you. I have a petition signed by 30 McLeod and residents requesting Council liaise with the Queensland Government to remove or cull a bat colony on McLeod Island. I propose the petition is of an operational nature and be received and referred to the Chief Executive Officer for consideration.
Do I have a seconder for that motion? Seconder, Councillor Telty. Those in favour of that? Sorry? Yes, Councillor. Do you want to talk to it first?
Just quickly. Flying fox colonies do move around the city, and where they do roost, and that they do cause some concerns to the local residents nearby. This bat colony is a seasonal event that happens in on McLeod Island, and I do appreciate there are some concerns from the local residents nearby. But they're a protected species, and they need to be managed and looked after. So there shouldn't be any expectations that Council or any other body will go out to cull them. But there are, I believe, our officers have responded to the principal petitioner and advised about any health issues, which can easily be dealt with, and some management issues around that. So I think there's probably a bit of education in that space might need to be done across the city.
Would you like some clarity, Councillor Bongwari?
Exactly what Councillor Edwards just mentioned then, that it's against, they're protected under state government. So we are actually allowed to accept a petition. It's as if we're saying, yes, we'll look into the culling, which is illegal. Are we allowed to do, or should we clarify now that we'll look into educational processes and that, but not necessarily what the petition's asking is, such as culling and removing, because we're not allowed to do that?
Well, there are quite specific regulations around these bat colonies, but it is possible that there will be health reasons or other reasons why a colony may need to be moved on, and there are humane ways to do that. But I'm not second-guessing what we're going to do. We can accept the petition, but it's likely that our response will be that, thank you for your petition, but we can't actually do that and explain why. education sense. But I think, yeah, no, we're not. We are not agreeing to the wording of the petition or committing to any outcomes other than the community's asked us to look at this. We're going to look at it and we'll lawfully provide a response.
I think the issue there, Councillor Blurry, is that the word cull is in there, which would mean to kill the animal. So I'll have a comment from you, Councillor Elliott.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I can remember in Division 8, Councillor Beard was here, the bat colony there, but I think it's federal government legislation and it's pretty heavy stuff. And there's only certain times you can do maintenance on things like that. So. And I understand from what Councillor Edwards just said that it has been handled operationally, so I'm sort of, this is going to go nowhere. I'm just sort of wondering, I'm in two minds to support this or not, because I know where it's going to go, and it's already been handled.
Okay, we're not really supposed to debate this item, so let's motion. Those in favour?
Aye.
Okay, those in favour again, please. Those in favour are Councillor Blurry, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Telty and Councillor Bishop. Those against?
Councillor Gleeson
was in favour. Oh,
Councillor Gleeson,
sorry.
Favour? I was
an aye. Yeah, those against? Councillor Golay, Councillor Elliott and Councillor Hewlett. Thank you. Moving on to the next item, we have no reports from the Office of the CEO, so we go straight to 12.1. Do I have a mover for that motion? Move Councillor Edwards, seconded. Councillor Elliott, would you like to speak to it, Councillor Edwards?
This is the first month of the financial years. It's very hard to read anything into it, particularly as I think part of this month too. We make our annual advance payment on our debt, so there's some significant hits we take. And it's a case of this is the first one, but I'd be waiting for about 3 months before I see any trends emerge.
Thank you, Councillor. Do I have any comments, questions? Councillor Blurry?
Oh, thank you. Through you to the CFO, I actually noted that there was a new format in here, and I was just going to let the CFO explain the new format, because if you're looking for different statements that were in here, they're not in here now. I just wanted to make sure it's all transparent and accountable as to where that information now is.
Thank you, Deborah. Can you answer?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. As Chair, thank you, Councillor, for the opportunity. Yes. Part of our annual review in the Financial Services Group is to look at the information that we provide and whether it's driving improvements in terms of Council's financial sustainability. So every year we look at the format of the monthly financials. We've proposed a few changes. We don't feel we've lost any information, but we've tried to amend the information. So where we had an operating and a capital funding statement that are particularly pertinent to a local government, all that information is held through either the Statement of Comprehensive Income or on another page where we talk to the capital programme. We've tried to highlight the work in progress, so that WIP component that gets talked about a lot, to try and drive performance improvement in our financial accounting. And we've also tried to highlight that might be of council's interest or community, some of the projects. So topics that have come up through either council requests, information requests from the business or through audit committee, we've responded to those through this new style of monthly reporting. So we don't see it as a significant change, more of an enhancement and continuous improvement. But happy to take any feedback as always.
There being no further questions or comments, Councillor Edwards, would you like to? We'll put the motion. Those in favour? Councillor Gleeson?
Aye.
Carried unanimously. Thank you. So I have a mover for item 12.2, please. Councillor Blurry, would you present the report?
I'd like to move item 12.2, the 2017-18 carryover budget review.
Thank you. Can I have a seconder for that, please? Councillor Edwards, seconder that. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Blurry?
I think it's all in the report. The only part that I was concerned about was our carryover of 17 million, and I think actually through you again to the CFO, if the officer could explain actually how the process has been changed to actually remedy this going forward and making it more a realistic and deliverable program, because I think it's really good, the new process and steps that they've put in place.
Thank you, CFO.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Through you as Chair, thank you again for the opportunity to explain. ELT takes great pride in looking at the monthly financials and the deliverability of the program, and on reflection, the $95 million capital works program in 17-18 didn't come to fruition. Now, we know sometimes projects of a capital nature take time to gain permits, licenses, and don't always close neatly at the end of a financial year. So what we proposed to you as a council was to, when you're doing your budgeting for the following year, look at a threshold that will accommodate a capital carryover portion. So councils may recall that we talked about a threshold for 18-19 that was a little bit lower, and council chose to prioritise that CapEx, and then that really accommodates a capital carryover component. So ELT is very aware about delivering the programme this year. We're mindful that the capital works, should you adopt this proposal this morning, will increase to $84 million, so it's got a strong focus on ensuring that the organisation delivers the programme. So we have changed some of the process. We've introduced capital works prioritisation through our portfolio management office, and we've got a strong focus on delivering the programme.
At that point, I'd just like to say that I'd like to also commend the officers who've done that prioritisation process up in that office. I think it's been a great asset to council to have all those processes put in place. So thank you.
Thank you, CFO. Any further councillor views?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Through you to the CFO, on page 22 of this report, we've got issues on the bottom, and the very last sentence refers to the Judy Holt Northern Land Matters work and the Birkdale Landfill Remediation Capping, obviously in my division, and something I'm very, very aware of and sharing with my residents and the wider community. When you flick through a CFO through to the last page of the financials, you can see that we have got a double entry on that payment, and I would like you just to explain that double entry and why that's come about. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Through his chair, thank you, Councillor Hughes, for the question. When we talk about landfill and landfill provision and remediation, there's a added complexity through the Australian Accounting Standard. So the Australian Accounting Standard Board requires an organisation to recognise a liability on its balance sheet if it feels it has a obligation to rehabilitate. So there's something called a liability on council's balance sheet, and a provision is a liability of uncertain timing or amount. So we actually fund the closed landfill works through a provision on the balance sheet. So what we've tried to portray in this submission to council today is, through the Australian Accounting Standards work that council undertakes every year, we have a liability on the balance sheet, and that's how the work is funded. So the other submissions that are put to council today don't have that other side, because not everything else is linked to a liability on the balance sheet. I know that's not completely plain language, so please let me know if that isn't clear.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Councillor Edwards. Thank you, Deborah.
Yeah, this is just a comment. I just want to first explain simply what this report is, and then I do have a question. Is that every year this comes before us because there are capital works that aren't completed. And so after we've done the budget, these are the works that we carry the funding forward. The only exception to this is that, and it's probably where the question is Councillor Hughes referred to the landfill works, but there's an amount of $600,000, which is like a budget request, as I see this for some human resource information system along with those works. And the question is it brought into this book because it was missed during the budget process? Because I would have imagined that would have been part of the normal budget process you would have done.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Through you, Chair, thank you for the question, Councillor Edwards. No, it wasn't missed as part of the budget process. It's an interesting submission, this one. The HRIS system could be, through the Australian Accounting Standards, could be classified as operating or capital. And I'm fortunate enough to sponsor the asset management project where we're looking at a new system. So there's parallels there, so I can talk to the HRIS. And both our head of people and culture and myself sponsor to significant projects, and we had capital budget in there. So you may recall that the HRAS actually had a capital budget submission last year. Through the project, through the tendering and procurement process, different products have been reviewed by council, and the product chosen falls under the accounting definition that's an operating expense. So it was originally capital in nature. Amanda and I have spoken at length that we need the best product for the organisation, and Amanda has talked to ELT, her colleagues, about this. So we're not going to choose a product that conveniently aligns to the accounting standards. That's not the right thing to do. We've chosen a product that's in the best interest of Redland City Council. That's of an operating nature with the accounting standards. So we've put that budget request through. Amanda and I are also working hard to try and offset that $600,000 ask. We found $140,000 to date purely through growth from the population adjustment in the financial assistance grant. So we're not going to put that through this budget review, but I'm confident by 30 June through growth and other savings we'll be able to offset the $600,000 operating expenditure asked this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, CFO. Are there any further questions or comments? Councillor McGlary, do you have any more to add?
No, I'll just put the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to put the motion. All in favour?
Aye.
Carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Moving on to 12.3, could I have a move for 12.3, please, Councillor Mitchell?
Yes, happy to move 12.3, the 2018-19 registers of fees minor amendments.
Can I have a report, please, Councillor Edwards? I'd like to speak to it, Pitt. Councillor Mitchell, sorry.
It's fairly procedural. It's just some very minor amendments to the 18-19 register of fees. That's all in the report. Some lovely detail for you on a cold night.
Councillor Bishop, are you a speaker against or just a comment? Okay, certainly.
Thank you very much. Through you, Deputy Mayor, I presume to the authorising officer, Deborah Corbett-Hall, just to describe a little bit about the change of the photocopying charges. Just particularly want to ask a question. If someone wanted to do, for example, an RTI, would that be considered to be officer-assisted photocopying? And would that be $1.20 per sheet, for example, if that's the way that would happen? Sorry about that question on notice.
Thank you, Councillor, for the question. I just consulted with our Acting General Counsel, who's also held a role in the corporate governance space. My understanding is if an applicant were to apply through the RTI, it's got its own associated costs. So the RTI team will allocate costs, liaise with the applicant to see if those costs are acceptable. This is separate, so this has been included in our fees and charges should someone wish for some assistance with photocopying.
Thank you. And I just note that if anyone in the community is aggrieved by changes, to let us know so that we can address that down the track. So thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bishop. I assume there's no further questions or comments. Councillor Mitchell, nothing further. Could I put the motion, please? All those in favour?
Aye.
Carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Could I please have a mover for item 12.4, please? Councillor Bishop?
Yes, this is just moving item 12.4, the Audit Committee of 19th of July 2018. Just moving the reports as noted.
Could I have a second for that motion, please? Second, Councillor Hughes. Would you like to speak further to it, Councillor Bishop?
I don't think there's anything further to add, apart from if I could ask Deborah Corbett-Hall just to give us a rundown, because I think there's some good news in the meeting from the last, outcome from the last meeting, and if you could just give us a brief update, I think it would be worthwhile.
Thank you, Deborah.
Trace?
Yeah, just let Councillor Bishop. Deborah can respond first, then we'll come to you, Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Through you, Chair, thank you, Councillor. This doesn't sit under my portfolio, but in support to councillors, I attended the last Audit Committee, proudly as CFO, and I've been asked why there is a list of business arise from the previous minutes. Councillor Hughes asked me that, and I'm happy to talk to that because we know that sometimes questions and requests through Audit Committee take a period of time to close out and require consultation with key stakeholders and possible process changes. So the intention of the minutes is to capture and ensure those actions don't fall off. So we've carried those forward through each audit committee. I was also asked why there are no actions from that Audit Committee on the 19th of July, and I responded saying that we closed them out in session. So my language, that was the good news story, that what was asked in the session on the 19th of July was closed out, so which is an achievement because we get a lot of questions through Audit Committee. So on behalf of ELT, we were very proud of the organisation that it got closed out in session. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. Okay, no further questions or comments? Councillor Elliott?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Sometimes we're, you know, people question our finances and things like that in the public area, but I can draw your attention to page 108, which is page 2 in the Audit Committee report. You can see this. We have a couple of external members there, highly qualified people, and also invitees. If you look at the invitees list, you'll see Queensland Audit Office, PricewaterhouseCoopers, a lot of high-powered overview there going on. So, you know, I'm quite comfortable with the way this organisation's financial affairs from the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Elliott. Councillor Bishop, anything further? Or
nothing further to add, thanks.
Motion, please. Councillor Gleeson?
Aye.
Carried unanimously, thank you. Item 12.5. Excuse me, can I have a mover for 12.5, please? Councillor Elliott?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 12.5, the 2018 LGA Care Conference. Redley City Council motion. I'm happy to move that with the amendment. And the amendments.
I'll have a second of that. Could I give a second? Yeah, can we get the amendment on the board, please? It's on the TV now, isn't it? Not on the board. Would you like to read the amended motion, Councillor Elliott?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The proposed motion is that Council resolves as follows. One, that Council be represented by Mayor Karen Williams and Deputy Mayor Lance Hewlett as official delegates 2018 LGAQ Annual Conference. Two, the Council's voting rights at the conference are split equally between the two official delegates. Three, I don't think we need Anne, but it'll stay there. Three, that the attached motion, including an additional attachment four, be endorsed for submission to the 2018 LGAQ Annual Conference. And I'll just say in four, can we bring four up on the board at all? Attachment 4. Thank you. And this this is a late one. I'd raised myself, so I'm going to apologise for the lateness of it. This was to do with the full postal ballot. The council has that discretion. So I'm happy to talk to you.
I need a second if you motion first. Councillor Bagallari.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I think first parts 1, 2, 3 are pretty one and two are straightforward. Draw your attention and the community's attention to attachment 4. The conference motion is that, that the Local Government Association of Queensland lobbies the state government for an amendment to the Local Government Electoral Act 2011 to provide local governments with the discretion to choose their election polls to be conducted by full postal ballot. At the moment, the background, as it states, it's only regional communities and large rural sectors, large remote areas or extensive island areas, and I think we've touched on that once before, and I don't think. But certainly I think that this needs to change. I'm aware of the political things. I don't think it'll ever change at the state or the federal sphere. But certainly in local government, everybody in this room has experienced one election at least, and I've done several, and it doesn't get any better. And to waste everybody's time for 2 weeks on a pre-poll, the evidence was, and I've seen long, up to 50% of people voted before the election day, so there's a monumental shift, and I think the, a full postal vote option, you can still do it if you like, it should be at the discretion of that, those particular councils, because we even had an election official that had to be replaced, I understand, the last one due to the stress. So, you know, this isn't just about me, this is about the health of everybody, and we know the argy vote happens at pre-poll. The benefits, we can still put our signs up. But that is just a total waste of everybody's time in pre-poll. The sooner we move to postal, and sooner or later we'll get electronic, but I'm not going to hold my breath. But certainly a full postal option is there. So those that want to do it, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any speakers against? Just a comment, Councillor Larry, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'd also just like to talk to the other motions that are here. The first motion is, once again, through our council, we're going to lobby the state government for improvements on community residents. I think this is about the fifth year in a row that I've put this motion up, and every year the mayor and the councillors there, we get up and talk diligently and for our communities to try and get better outcomes here, and I believe we're chipping away at it. So hopefully, eventually, in the planning regs, it'll have safer conditions for where these transitional houses should be placed. So after the horrendous episodes that I went through with my residents at Ormiston many years ago, I think I'll just keep putting this one up each year until we get complete satisfaction on where we're going with it. The other one that I put up this year was the park and ride strategy. The state government is insisting on higher density along our railway lines, and being a division that has two and one on the outskirts with Councillor Bishop's train station there, our residents are being so impacted with the increased density because state government is not supplying sufficient park and rides at the train station. So our residents sometimes can't get to work because commuters that are driving up from Vicky Point and that to use the trains, parking across their driveways. And I had a phone call one Saturday actually asking me for permission to drive along the footpath to get out of their house to get to a wedding because they'd been parked in. So I think the state government, if they want increased densities around our train stations, plus they give relaxations to developments in that area on car parking, then they have to encourage car parking to get people to actually use this public transport, because not only is it impacting on those local residents, it's impacting on our roads because people can't get a car park. If they have to walk three blocks or four blocks in wet weather, then they're going to keep using our roads. So I really hope that the local government get behind us on this. And the mayor put up one for extra funding for national land care. And as the mayor is on South East Queensland councillor mayors and other organisations where they're discussing that, they've want to lobby the state government for increased funding there. And I think that's another one that's very close to the hearts of Redlands. So I just wanted to explain, at the local government conference, we all go along, we all get a chance to talk to these motions, and every year we put up motions, and I'm quite proud of that because a lot of councils don't. You see a lot of councils just go along and they're not even really partaking in the debate, but Redlands is there, and I just want to reassure the community we're there fighting for better outcomes, not only for you but across the state. Thank you.
Glary, some very good points there. Councillor Telto, I believe, was next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to note, and I support everything Councillor Boglari just said, and it is, having had a transitional housing issue in my electorate, I'm fully behind that motion. And I just wanted to clarify, we're voting through this motion to elect the people who will hold our voting cards and vote on the motions on behalf of the council, but that doesn't preclude other councillors, especially as this particular conference is in Brisbane, from attending for educational and developmental purposes the rest of the conference. I just want to confirm that's correct for the community, and that, you know, we all take an interest in this, but we do nominate two delegates to be our representatives to actually hold the voting cards on our behalf.
I believe so, but I can get John to clarify that for
you. Yes, no, that is correct. So we have to allocate the voting rights, which we've done, but other councillors, through their normal professional development opportunities, are able to go and attend this conference. So
we can carpool. Councillor Bishop, thank you.
Yes, support everything that people have said prior. I just have a question, if I may, through you, and it probably is to Councillor Boglari, in relation to the policy regarding developing a park and ride strategy. Forgive me for not having raised this previously, but I'd just like to ask your thought and clarification in the motion. The Department of Transport and Main Roads develop a park and ride strategy that outlines the process for planning and upgrading of park and ride facilities. Should that be in association with councils? Should there be a reference in there, or should we allow them to just go ahead and do that? I'm just wondering, before the ink is dry and we vote on this, could I ask maybe an officer for a suggestion on that? I know it's domain of state government to deal with this entirely,
but is your intention to ask for them to do that in a way? Because often we will be aware of the land around those areas. I'm just wondering if I can ask clarification on that.
I mean, I'm happy for an officer to answer, but I would have presumed as the state government's QR stations are in local government jurisdictions that they would have had to have spoken to our at that regional transport and road meetings that they have. I would presume that would have been a foregone conclusion. If it isn't, no, but I mean there are other forums where they do discuss things with our engineers, our traffic engineers, and everybody else. I would have presumed if officers feel that that would strengthen it, I'm happy for that motion to be amended. If there's an officer here, is there a planner or
David Jennings just walked in there?
I beg your pardon.
Contributed to the development of this motion with you.
It's your motion,
David's coming up.
I forgive me for asking and being pedantic about it, but I just think given that it's a local government conference, that it might be worthwhile asking that question.
Since Mr. Jean has only arrived at the meeting, you may want to repeat your question, please.
Thank you.
Can we just identify who the officer is, please? I had a request from a resident who attended our last meeting. When an officer came up, they didn't know who they were. So if they could just say their position. Thank you.
So just for clarification, David, I appreciate you've just come into the room since I've asked the question. This is a Local Government Association Queensland Annual Conference motion. The motion requests that the Department of Transport and Main Roads develop a park and ride strategy that outlines the process for planning and upgrading of park and ride facilities. My question before we vote is whether or not we should include that the Department of Transport and Main Roads develop a park and ride strategy in association with council or councils. Would that be of relevance or benefit or?
Thank you, Councillor. I think that's a very good idea. I do think it would happen regardless of whether you put the words in or not, because there would be collaboration between the two levels of government. But I think including that explicitly is probably a good idea.
Thank you, David. Can we include that into the?
Does that need a motion to amend or? Forgive me for going down to this detail, but I. So can I propose a motion that
so
we.
Can I have a. Council Bishop's proposed. Council Bishop's proposing to change the motion, amend the motion. Can I have second?
Chair, can we just ask the mover? Yep. She agrees to that and she can put it up and save a bit of money.
Yes.
You're the mover.
Oh, sorry, you were. Pardon me, I'm listening to the conversation.
This was my motion, but you moved the motion here.
Damon, can we pull some words together?
Yeah, okay. Yes, we're working on it now, so.
There you go. I was enthralled with that.
Can we bring it?
Yeah, can we cut the cameras from the tape?
Councillor, please, could you just specifically say what do you want to change again, please, so we can put on the record?
Thank you. That Department of Transport and Main Roads develop a park and ride strategy in association with councils.
In association with councils.
I think we could just say something
local
along the lines that the proposed motion, I think we numbered them, 1, 2, or 3, so whatever it is, be amended to include the addition to require consultation with local governments. Yeah. Relevant local governments forum.
Thank you.
Go back a little bit larger, please, Deborah. We need to specify which motion, though.
Is it numbered?
Attachment 3.
Thank you for your indulgence.
So can I now...
Have these not already been supplied to the LGAQ and kind of vetted for wording, etc.? Are we making this difficult?
No.
Excuse me, councillors, please, through the chair. Thank you.
No, they have not been submitted yet. They need to go through council first. In fact, LGAQ is pretty fussy these days about these motions going to council first because there's been a history of some sort of slipping through and then the councillors don't know about it. So it's not a Redland thing, it's an across the state thing. So no, these what you agree today is what we will submit.
So I just need a seconder for that motion now, is that correct?
The amendment. Yeah, so the amendment, the seconder for the amendment, you vote on the amendment.
Seconded by Councillor Bablari.
Okay. We vote on the amendment, then the amendment becomes the motion.
Councillor Bishop and Councillor Bablari seconded it. Okay, now we take speakers for or against the motion? Against the motion?
Yeah, I think you vote on the amendment.
So we vote on the amendment? All in favour? Councillor Gleeson?
Yep.
Carried now, unanimously.
Now that amendment is the motion.
Okay, this amendment is now live. We have speaker, Councillor Edwards.
I'd just like to refer to what Councillor Elliott said initially when you spoke about the proposal to go to full postal ballot, full postal option. I'd just like to clarify that just because these proposals are going to the LGAQ annual conference doesn't going to mean that again it will automatically be accepted by the state. So there's a process that goes through. But what I would be interested in is because I think this is topical, there are some savings and I think there are some benefits out of this. I'd personally encourage anyone in my community to contact, give me their opinion from the community of how they feel about this. It's probably throughout the city. Let us all the councils know concerns, support, against, so we are at least informed that if it does become an option, we have an understanding of how our community feels about this, because this is a very big issue. This is a significant change that would happen. So I think there's a lot of benefits to it, but I'd like to have a sense of what my community feels about it.
Good points, Councillor Edwards. Any other speakers? Councillor Golay?
Yes, thanks, Mr. Chair. This particular attachment for in relation to the postal votes really highlights the aspect that councils in southeast Queensland don't just make things up as they go. We're very much governed by state legislation. And these types of conferences allow us as local members or, correction, local elected councillors to actually lobby the state to make amendments to state legislation. So just as a matter of governance, so the public understands, we don't just make stuff up as we go. We're very much under state legislation. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Golay. Any other speakers? Councillor Mitchell?
I'm allowed to go back to the park and ride motion, aren't I? more just a comment.
Your councillor, you can do what you feel.
Thanks very much. Very supportive of the motion, but just want to comment on transport and certainly public transport, mass people moving. It's very topical in our city. We've got a couple of strategies underway. And while park and ride is one very specific strategy where and currently very popular, people will drive their motor vehicle to somewhere and park it. I don't want to confuse this particular motion. It's important there's lots of other options that we might be looking at or the state could be looking at to move people around that first mile and last mile that maybe never involves a motor vehicle, might involve other shuttles or other emerging technology. So or even for the general populace to start looking at their own behaviours and walk and cycle and other methods too. So very supportive of the park and ride, but just reminding us all that that's just one fairly blunt tool that we're using and just to keep mindful that there are perhaps lots of others and things we could look at into the future as well. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Mitchell. I've just been advised that because Councillor Aglari seconded the original motion, she wasn't allowed to second the amended motion, so I need a formal second with Councillor Hughes. I don't think there's any further discussion, so I'll put this amended motion. Those in favour?
Aye.
Carried unanimously. Thank you. Sorry for the confusion there. Okay, let's move on to 12.6. Do I have a move for 12.6? Councillor Hughes?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I would like to move item 12.6, Managing Unreasonable Complaint, Customer Conduct Policy and Guideline. Thank you.
Do I have a seconder for that motion? Councillor Edwards, would like to speak to it, Councillor Hughes?
Thank you again, Deputy Mayor. I'd like to commend the author of the report, Marita West, our Governance and Service Manager. She had distributed the policy to us and the guideline for comment. A lot of work's gone into this, both documents, the policy document and the guideline document. I think looking at the purpose of these two documents are to assist council. And we know our ICCC, our customer service team, do an outstanding job, and not just here in the council building, but anywhere they're out, our staff, anywhere they're at in our parks, they're out working for us on the side of the road. Sometimes there are some unreasonable people out there that just, we need this policy behind our staff to support those. What I wanted to point out too is with these documents is that this is an basically internal document for our staff protection, but I also don't want our residents to think that this is in some way, shape or form for them as well. We know, I think in every division, we've probably got one or two residents that make other residents in their streets' life a jolly misery. Because one of the first things I thought of was that this could be to help some of our residents, and that's not the case. This is an internal document. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hughes. Do you have any speakers against?
I will speak against, although I'm in support of our ability for officers to be looked after. The reason I speak against is I think it's very important that we are clear as we send a signal about managing unreasonable complainer / customer conduct policy and guideline, that managing unreasonable complaints according to whom? I think in the document it does refer to some of this, but as I look through the document, there are issues that talk about the intent of this policy is to deal with unreasonable communications to councillors and staff. And I understand that we do need to deal with vexatious and clearly problematic behaviour, and I know that we currently do not have a lever to do that for officers to enforce that. My concern that I would like to raise as a bit of a cautionary tale is that we don't use this as something that is considered to be political, or where a person, because what it refers, where a person feels aggrieved and therefore wants to use officers to wield this new big stick against someone. I think we need to be very clear about what limits this has. In the report which is referred to, the Ombudsman's report, version 2, it has on page 9 a page that says, if you read nothing else, read this page. And it says very clearly, this is not about stifling free will or freedom of expression or the fact that you may have a very legitimate concern. So the reason I'm speaking against this, and I think we need to be very clear as council, is if I as a councillor feel offended by something that someone in the community is doing and I ask an officer to intervene based on this policy, I think I need to have very clear guidelines as to what I should expect. We should have training about that because we don't want to be sending a signal that we're going to be jumping down our community's throats. I think the way current politics is, sometimes people have a right to get grumpy to elected officials, and I don't want officers to be spending time trying to make us feel comfortable and give us some sort of extra stick to manage our affairs. Having said that, I also know that they don't
officers don't currently have an instrument of any kind to deal with legitimate concerns. So I think we need to be careful about how we manage this. I certainly don't want to see us using this in any punitive way or a political manner. And I think referencing something like the page 9 that the Ombudsman report has and says clearly that the community has right to express their views, it's very worthwhile implementing into a report like this. So I'm actually going to err on the side of caution. And actually, if I may I ask the authoring officer through you to just give some confidence to the other councillors and to myself, if necessary, about what limits are in place there in terms of what could be expected. Is that a fair thing to ask?
I'm sure Mr. Oberhard can answer some of those questions.
Thank you.
People.
I've got Marita and Claire there if I need some technical, but I just want to make the point, this doesn't take away people's rights. It just gives us some guidance so that we can, in a structured way, make a determination about whether someone is being unreasonable in their dealings with council. The Ombudsman wants us to do that because they like us to be able to do that in a structured way. If we were being the unreasonable ones, people still have a right to go to the Ombudsman, and the Ombudsman's first port of call, they're going to come back to us and say, well, why did you classify this person as unreasonable? We're going to have to prove to them that we've been objective in our assessment, and they will either agree or disagree. So it is possible in your scenario we've deemed that they're unreasonable. The Ombudsman looks at it and doesn't accept our rationale for determining that they're unreasonable, then they will deal with it. So they can still go above our heads to the Ombudsman if they're not satisfied with the way that we're doing this. It doesn't shut them down in that regard. And we already have informal mechanisms to deal with it, but this just gives us a more formal way to go and apply essentially a checklist as to whether or not someone is being unreasonable. Councillors have been included in this to also help give councillors a guideline about how they might determine someone is reasonable or unreasonable, but councillors actually don't have the same requirement, and I say requirement because it's a local government act thing, to deal with complainants or complaints. So, for example, you know, we get correspondence to the council, we are required to deal with that. Correspondence to the councillor, I know you do deal with it, but there's no legal requirement for you to do so. You can push, delete, not return the phone call. These are all things within your power to do as a councillor, whereas as an administration, we've got obligations to deal with those complaints. But I think putting councillors in is just a good way for councillors to be able to try and somehow objectively make a determination about whether they're going to consider them reasonable or unreasonable.
Are you satisfied with that, councillor?
A supplementary question then. In order to identify the distinction between an elected representative and an officer, totally understand why that's necessary for officers, as you've described, but in order for councillors to be clear about when and where and how and why they can proceed and ask officers to investigate and spend time, should we not have something like that page 9 from the Ombudsman report, which does go through some, you know, it suggests there needs to be training for people as to what they can expect? Because I would rather not see councillors go, I think that person's being vexatious, and then have officers have to go and investigate and go down a rabbit warren. I think we live in a political environment that officers don't need to give them some clarity, but...
We will make our own determination. So councillors won't make the determination about he or she is unreasonable. The officers will do that based on their interaction with the person, not the councillor. So you wouldn't be able to say to me, oh, John, this guy's unreasonable, don't deal with him. We would have to make our own assessment based on the policy, not based on your opinion. And that would apply to all councillors. But the training and other, Marita and Claire might have something to add to that. I think that's probably not unreasonable.
I just think that the Ombudsman report does specifically mention that as an item, and I think that's something that we should look at. If that was in place, I'd support it. But at the moment, thanks.
Speakers 4, Councillor Edwards. I had Councillor Edwards as next. Oh, sorry. My apologies.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I was just going to make a comment in relation to Councillor Bishop's comments. The guideline sets through the process, so ultimately the definitions are quite clear in terms of what defines unreasonable complainant or conduct. So you have to follow the processes, and the CEO makes the determination. So as John said, it's not up to you as a councillor to say, I don't like the way this particular resident is treating me, and I'm going to utilise this stick, as it were, to stop them from contacting me. There is a process that has to be followed. You know, the CEO's obliged to follow the guideline processes as well. The Ombudsman's practice manual is referred to in the policy document, so the CEO has to be aware of that when he makes the decision.
Thank you, Claire. Councillor Edward, sorry.
Thank you. It's my understanding that the CEO has always had the authority to act on residents who believe it's being unreasonable, so this does give structure around that, and it's a clear thing. I'd like to point out that the amount of residents that would fall into this category is so small. It's not something that it's not a problem. It's not the case of getting all these people coming in. So it just does for those small number of individuals who won't accept the information given to them. It is a way to address them. But as a councillor, if I would suggest if anybody's uncertain of anything that they're doing, do what I do, and I've pestered our legal counsel, I've pestered Mr. Oberhard a number of times, sending an email, getting some clarification on the issue. If there's something you're not sure on, always seek advice, and I've found officers very helpful in that regard. So I don't see this so much. This is operational. Powers have already been there. Give some structure to, and it's going to be a policy that's probably going to be referred to very frequently.
Thank you, Councillor Edwards. Councillor Gollay.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Again, I just refer back to the Local Government Act, and this is where there's a misconception within the general public. Councillors are not the boss and do not have the authority to direct council staff or the public service at work within the council staff. Right from day one, we were taught as new councillors that an operational matter comes into council, it needs to be directed back to the organisation through your support staff, and the organisation will deal with it. As Mr. Oberhard has just pointed out, as a councillor, we are not obliged to accept and respond to every single phone call, email of demand. You can press delete or not answer. However, I think that would be detrimental to a future vote in an election, plus the fact that we're also here to represent the public interest. So we take it on ourselves to diligently act on behalf of the public. But I will refer to the risk management in this report. It does say protect the health and safety of officers, the complainants, and others. And it also talks about improving efficiency and commitment to appropriate resource allocation in the complaints process. Now, when I first got elected, I came into this program where I was actually chased as a candidate by particular complainants in the community who thought that because I was possibly going to be elected, that I was somehow the new boss in town and I was the sheriff and I was going to show everyone. It doesn't work that way, and the public need to understand that. We are a stepping stone and a gateway between the general public and the organisation of council. What's been happening, and this is why we need this structure, is long-term residents who, through the legal channels of court, there has been an attempt to have them classed as unreasonable. That has failed. They still have every right to come to council to seek advice, but not every single week on a Friday afternoon at 1 o'clock, hitting the staff up, abusing the staff downstairs, not getting their way, and then coming upstairs, ringing the bell at reception at council, demanding to see the CEO, or abusing council support staff. We do have very few residents like that. They are out there with the belief that somehow we have this all-encompassing power of a predatory nature, that we can influence the outcomes of officers. And this will set some very clear guidelines, especially for staff, so that we have some structure, we have the backup and support, and people are not left wanting. Our staff downstairs do a great job. They don't need to be abused. Our general counsel doesn't need to be called and abused. Councillors don't deserve to be abused. There are certain protocols within the Local Government Act that set out what our role is, what the officer's role is, and how we implement the strategies around that to support the general public in the public interest. We are not the whipping boys, and neither are the staff within the organisation. I'm happy to support this and put some structure around this, proper governance within state legislation under the Local Government Act, so that we actually can just get on with the job and deal with the business every day. Thank you.
Councillor Golly, just before I take the next speaker, I'll just refer to Claire again. Thank you, Claire.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I just hope, I'm not sure if I understood the comment that you made, Councillor, but I thought that you said that Council has tried through the court process to declare a resident vexatious. That's not actually correct.
My understanding was that there were certain matters where there was certain individuals who there was an attempt to seek if they were vexatious or gain information whether they were vexatious, and that wasn't successful. Is that true? Or
We have internally considered it, but we've never taken any action.
Well, then I stand corrected in that respect, but I do know that the advice I received was along those lines, that there has been some sort of action to try to deem or get advice in relation to having...
Mr Chair, we've really varied off the point of...
Yeah, I think we strayed a bit too far. We're in difficult...
Yeah, I understand. I'm just responding to the General Counsel's question. Thank you.
Okay, Councillor Baglari. Okay, any other speakers on this point? Motion? Having said that, back to you, Councillor Hughes, to close off.
Thank you. I was going to sum up, and I think on that note I will not. I will just move the Council's resolves to adopt the policy and guideline for managing unreasonable complaint and customer conduct. Thank you all.
Bye.
Division, please. Vote in favour. Councillor Baglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Telty, Councillor Hewlett.
Aye. Oh,
Councillor Gleeson is for. Councillor Bishop is against. Thank you. Please have a mover for item 12.7, please. Councillor Baglari.
Happy to move item 12.7, making amendments subordinate local law number 2.
Seconder, Councillor Elliott. Before we discuss this point, I think it should be known that Governance did send an email out to all councillors explaining what this report was about. So, just so we don't digress too much in the local laws. Sorry? Well, look. Do you want to speak to John or...? Okay, well, I can refer to Claire or Marita if you...
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Yes, this is a report just regularising a previous resolution in relation to amending two local laws, very minor amendments to two local laws. In the previous resolution, it was considered that the amendments were administrative in nature, and so Council took the process that is involved with making an administrative amendment to local laws. The Department has since come back and advised that they don't consider that the amendments were administrative in nature and that Council had to follow the process of local law amendment making. So that's why this has come back to Council, just to follow that process.
Thank you, Claire. I believe, Councillor Baglari, you were going to move an amended motion, didn't you?
Yes, okay. Sorry, I just read the title, but I should have said as per amended, because we want the CEO to actually write to the Director General, as that amendment in number 7 says, of the local government, to seek clarification on what constitutes an administrative amendment for local law, so we don't get in this situation again. That was all.
Well,
so that's the amendment.
Seconder for the amended motion. Seconder, Councillor Hughes. Those in favour of accepting that amended motion? Councillor Gleeson?
Aye.
Carried unanimously. Now the amended motion is live. Would you like to speak with Councillor Lowry any further? Any speakers against the motion? Any comments? Are you Councillor Talty?
Oh, question.
Yes.
This is a very big, complex agenda with all these local law changes, and I'm just trying to... Sorry, I did make notes, but I haven't got them with me. This item relates to the parking charges, doesn't it?
Through you, Deputy Mayor, yes, there are two amendments. So one of them is the penalty infringements for subordinate local law 4, and the other one, it relates to the removal from one local law and insertion in another local law in relation to waste bins on the street. This report covers both amendments.
Any further questions, Councillor?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I won't be supporting it because I didn't support the significant increase in parking infringements the first time round.
Claire, could you please address that for me, thank you?
Yes, thank you, Deputy Mayor. It's my understanding that that's the process that was followed. Because it was considered an administrative amendment, it went up in the report, which related to the fees. Yes.
As is always the case in the Chamber, we speak to the various issues that we do or do not agree with, but if the balance of the report is acceptable, then in terms of reasonableness, we support the overall position of the Council.
I believe a few Councillors spoke against the increase at the time too, Councillor Talley. So thank you. Any other speakers on this motion?
It's just about the process, not about that. So it's about if you don't agree to this, you're not agreeing to the process to change the law. Mm. So I'm not.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
This is about just approving the process that the government. We've had legal advice and a bit argy-bargy, and we've gone back again.
Yeah, I think the argument's already been had about.
Yeah, exactly.
There's the opportunity for councillors to review the charges if they would like.
Councillor Gleeson? I think we've lost Councillor Gleeson. Those in favour? Councillor Vaglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes and Councillor Bishops. Those against, Councillor Talty. And Councillor Gleeson was for.
Aye. No, sorry, I was against.
Oh, sorry, Councillor Gleeson was against, sorry.
Yeah, Chair, can I just point out that the microphone's blanked out then. I don't know if someone wasn't using the microphone or not, but there was about 30 seconds there I couldn't actually hear.
Thank you, Councillor Gleeson. We'll just have to endure. He was just, Councillor Gleeson was just pointing out that the microphone blanked out for a minute, so he couldn't actually hear that well, but he is voting against that motion.
Yep.
Correct.
Down to item 13.1, councillors. Could I please have a mover? Councillor Edwards? Yes, have a second of that motion, Councillor Elliott. Any comments or?
No, all in there every meeting.
Councillor Bishop.
Just wanted to refer to Category 2 decision regarding Avon Capital Estates, the proposed development at 23A Galley Way, Birkdale, which relates to Hanalei Street. Just want to acknowledge that consultation between residents and council officers and also the developers has been ongoing, even though it's code assessment. That is proceeding now to the reconfiguration to 31 lots. Just the last remaining farm in that area in Birkdale. I just think it's just noting that that is passing through at this point. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Happy to put the motion. Those in favour? Councillor Gleeson?
Aye.
Carried unanimously. Oh, sorry, Councillor Mitchell was absent from the meeting. Down to 13.2, sorry. I have a move for 13.2. Councillor Edwards. Do I have a seconder for that? Councillor Hughes. Any speakers for, against? Any comments, questions? Councillor Guy.
I was just going to seek if we could get an update sometime on what's actually happening with a lot of these cases. Some of them seem to be outstanding for
I think that's already in hand. Council are aware that we'll be having an update very soon about those cases. So. No other questions or comments, I'll put the motion. As in favour?
Aye.
Carried unanimously. Okay. Item 13.3, I just have to move this for procedural motion first. Could I please have a mover that item 13.3 of the General Meeting, 25th of July 2018, Koala Conservation Action Plan 2016-21 Delivery Program 2018-19 Financial Year, removed from the table as amended and discussed as item 13.23. No, I just need a move of Councillor Baglari. Can we vote on that, please? Councillor Gleeson?
Aye.
You just get some advice. I think it's a procedural motion. Yeah, it doesn't need a seconder, and it's not one to be debated as far as my understanding of our standing orders go, but you certainly can debate it when you get to the item. And you don't have to vote for it either, so.
Yeah, it was only moved by Councillor Barr with the second. We'll just take the vote on the amended motion, then we'll debate it later. Sorry, the procedural motion, sorry. Those in favour? Councillor Gleeson?
Aye.
Carried. Those in favour again? Councillor Baglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Bishops, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Hewlett, and against Councillor Talty. Thank you. Councillor Baglari, would you like to speak to it, please?
I'd like to move 13.3, Koala Conservation Action Plan 2016-2021 Delivery Program.
Can I have a second of that, please? Councillor Hughes? I'd like to speak to it, please, Councillor Glory.
Is the microphone on, Chair?
Oh, sorry. I'll sum up on that bit for you, Councillor Gleeson. I think it's a very exciting report. After 10 years in council and various methods and discussions about saving koalas across our city, this, I think, has been the most researched and scientifically based report we've had. The report is actually just an update on the plan delivery initiatives from the Koala Conservation Action Plan. The goal is to protect and improve koala habitat, reduce koala deaths, and all the decisions in the report are actually based on science. The first year of the action plan is based on critical research on koala populations and habitat assessments and a community koala awareness survey. And then these works will all go in to inform a strategic plan for longer term koala management. And on page 240, you can actually see some of the information that they've already collected. Genetics on koalas in the southern part of the area is still to be finalised, so there's still work to be done, and we understand this. But what is also interesting is that an estimated koalas, it is estimated, are using 68% of the available habitat in the city. So for many years, we keep hearing there aren't koalas, you know, we should give up on koalas on urban lands, on those non-believers, but the science is actually proving that to be wrong. The population density, like I said, and abundance for the Redland mainland koalas hasn't been fully analysed yet. And I think that's also important that this is a living document and continues to be actioned throughout it. Habitat conservation, prioritisation analysis, this is exactly what we need. The Koala Action Group is a very dedicated and passionate and energetic group who continue to do plantings across our city along with council officers and our bush care groups. And this actually is showing how important that planting is. But now we're prioritising so we can give information to these groups as to where their next plantings should be. Very positive message down the bottom of page 240 that despite the pressures of urbanisation, the Redlands Coast has an above average area of occupied koala habitat and has maintained at least three generations of koalas across the city. Redlands koala population appears to be ecologically functional and even predominantly urbanised areas. So I think that is such a positive. And for many people who look out their windows and see the koalas, I guess they already knew that there were koalas there. But now we have, in collaboration with the Griffith Uni, we've actually got all this research and it's scientifically based. So I commend the officers on the quality of this report and the information in it and some of the initiatives going forward, having a Koala Safe Neighbourhood Precinct. I'm really excited to see the outcomes of these actions. So I'm looking forward to it and thank you again to the officers.
Thank you, Councillor Glory. A very good summary. Speakers against, Councillor Telty.
Thank you, Mr Chair. We all have a great concern for the koala, and we have in this council over the last 6 years done our utmost to support scientific evidence-based policy and planning. And while this report is headed in the right direction, and the report that's come to us today is improved on the report that was originally left to lay on the table and includes a little bit more of the data from those scientific inquiries. This is all extremely premature. We have a report coming in October which will give us the findings from that research. This report is asking us to commit funding based on assumptions of what will be in that report in October. It is asking us to commit funding for a program that is supposed to run during the breeding season for koalas, which we have missed for this year and therefore will have to run for next year. So there is no urgency for this to have been brought back to the table today. This could have been left until we had the full body of information in October and made a fully informed decision about the questions in regard to the expenditure in this report. So unfortunately, until my questions can be answered, and I'm told they can't be answered until we have the report in October,
then I can't support going forward and dedicating this kind of funding. So I'll be waiting for the October report, and I'll be reading that with great interest. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Telty. Councillor Barr.
Hi, I just wanted to ask you through the chair if we have a an officer that could answer that, because I would hate this actual work to be held up on one point. There are lots of actions in this report that can be commenced, and I was just wondering if there's an officer in the room that actually was one of the reporting officers or anything that would be confident enough to talk to the matter. Perhaps they could give us a brief overview of it, because it is a really good news story, and Redlands is naturally wonderful. It's all part of it.
Through you, Deputy Chair and Deputy Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Boglari. Yes, we do have officers in the back, so I'll get Pippa to come forward. And I see Katz there as well, who's our Koala Action Officer. Just while the officers are joining us, the Koala Action Strategy has already been adopted by Council, and the action plan covers quite a number of years. So this is really visibility for the community to see that first year of action items. You'll note separately that there is another report that's on the agenda at item... on the agenda at item... the very next one, which is about work that the state's doing in terms of the Koala Expert Panel. You know, that work is very separate, but will be informing the work that we're doing. So the officers have joined us now, so I'm happy for you to take the question. So, Kat.
Thank you for your questions. Just to address where we're sitting with the current plans, we have enough information from the work that's been to date and previous information to use Ormiston as a candidate area for the Koala State Neighbourhood Precinct. And we also are right in breeding season. So the campaigns that we are a little bit delayed in getting some of this out there. But we will, as of the 1st of September, we'll be doing a very comprehensive campaign for the community around koala breeding season. They are in the pipeline now and will be released then. We will be hitting the key breeding month of October. So I think that we, and this will run until the end of the year, so I think we are addressing the issues that we need to get in for this very first stage. So I think this. I hope that helps you get a little clearer sense of where we are with this. We have to start somewhere. This is where we're starting. We are on target to get the reports. Those reports will be helping inform what we do over the next couple of years, but we have enough information, and we are in the centre of the breeding season, and we will be addressing that now.
With all due respect, Mr. Chair, councillors are being asked to make a decision, and we need to have enough information. It's not about whether the officers think they have enough information. They've put their report forward, and in my judgment, the report does not provide me enough information. So, no.
The Bishop.
And therein lies the dilemma that we have. There's information, there's waiting for science, and this is as much robust science as we have to hand. And I acknowledge and appreciate that Councillor Tolte has suggested that we've had a delay, or the officers are late with this report. It was councillors who asked for it to sit on the table, so that's held them up. I think they were on track to try and get this sorted for this breeding season, but our delay is not their choice. I want to acknowledge that we've come a long way in Redland City. There's a big debate about the koala and its place, and there's a lot of tension in the community between one end of land use planning, which is to subdivide and concretise, which is how we move forward. People need to live in houses, and houses and trees don't go together. So on one hand, you've got that tension.
On the other hand, you've got people who say, well, we have to protect everything. We have to protect all the trees. There is a balance. And we've gone down a path in the past where the koala was seen as something that was, you know, there were have been horrendous behaviour in association to perceptions about koalas. What this report does is a really important context resetting of the agenda. It's looking at data sets that involve science, that involve citizen science, that involve a range of different processes about what we know, what we are learning, and it's a consolidated collective view about taking that information, building a community view about the importance of this species. We are already getting a sense that its days are not over. The word of extinction, which was on a lot of people's lips a few years ago, some people were licking those lips as they were saying those words, and others were really despairing. There's hope in this, and I think science needs to be tempered by hope. And councillors need to speak on behalf of one iconic species, and the koala is one. It's protected by the state in this city. It's kept. We have proof to say that that species is alive. It's still going well. We'll get the genetics back soon. Has that genetics report come back yet? If I may, through you, Chair.
The both reports on the habitat assessment and the abundance and density and the genetics will be delivered in October.
Okay.
Beginning of October, I believe.
So I think what we're doing is we're earmarking a learning place. And one of the things that has happened since we put this on the table is I asked officers if they could collate all of the information that we have, which I note, I went back to the website the other day, and we've got so much information now that is in one place. And I want to thank the officers for doing that, because if anyone's got a passing concern or a deep interest, they can look at what Redland City Council has done, is doing, intends to do, and I'm sure with Councillor Tolte's full endorsement down the track, we will go down a path that has science and hope for one iconic species. And the last point I'd like to make is that the koala is emblematic of all of the indigenous species. And without habitat for koalas, we don't have habitat for echidnas, for frilly-necked lizards, for wallabies, for sugar gliders. It is the Dunard. Oh,
I love the Dunard.
Councillor Tolte would like to see a report for the Dunard and its survival characteristics and how that might associate with the koala. I go off track. The point is, we need to go on a journey together where those who are going to be antagonistic towards one species and those who are supportive work together to live in this wonderfully natural place that is the Redlands Coast, where the soils need to be managed and we are the decision makers. We need to involve trust and rigour. So thank you very much to the officers. I look forward to this developing with the community's support.
Thank you, Councillor Bishop. Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I have a couple of questions to the report, if I may. Thank you. Through yourself, to the, I was going to say Louise, now the team. And I'll start with the page 242, where we talk about a new extension officer. Thank you, Louise. Is this a full-time officer or a part-time officer? Is there a duration to this position, thanks? Thanks, Tim.
It is a new full-time position.
Full-time?
As a
okay.
Officer.
The report did not say full-time. Okay. Thank you.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, I might just add to it that the strategy had been adopted and the action plan at a previous council meeting that identified that there would be resource requirements over a period of time, and the timing had come by where, you know, Catherine has joined us, for example, and we need another officer to implement the work.
Fabulous.
So the budget and the program had been previously to council and also as part of the budget process.
Yes, I did remember that. I just wasn't sure full-time, part-time. All the support that we can give you, Catherine, to enable this whole report to be delivered. That's fabulous. My next question is on the last line, install road mitigation treatments at candidate pilot Koala State safe neighbourhood sites. Road mitigation, what would that entail, please? And do you have any idea yet where your candidate pilot sites would be? Thanks.
So the first pilot or candidate site is at Ormiston, and the roads that we are looking to trial and reduce threats, because the whole idea of the Koala Safe Neighbourhood is to reduce overall threats, which is roads and dogs, and try to look at those koalas and have a sort of centralised area where we will be managing, sort of create a koala sort of management hub, if you like. The road mitigation treatments will be around those painted wildlife zones and signage, where we can put fencing and wildlife fencing. It'll just depend on the site. So Ormiston was selected because it has already good information on a population that is well known. The roads were had historical information on vehicle strike for koalas, but they're also roads that we can actually manage because of the speed limits on those roads. So as the reports come in, we'll be able to look across the city and find other candidate sites, but Ormiston was an obvious candidate to get this rolling, and once those reports come in, we'll then be able to choose other sites and put in the appropriate road treatment mitigations around signs or fencing or those conservation zones.
Thank you, and I have one more question. I'm turning the page to 243. Down at the last stop point, koalas and the community, I was really interested in this high school challenge that you've listed here. Now, in the original report, it was to create a koala sculpture, and now we have amended this to say that we're looking at the intellectual property, basically. So can you just explain to me how this is going to work on many of us councillors are out there promoting all council initiatives, and this is going to be keenly of interest to our schools, I'm sure.
The idea originally was it was really just to engage that group of, you know, that youth group in trying to think about koala conservation. And we've broadened the idea to an art installation, so letting their imagination dictate what will be created to talk about koala conservation, how that will look. So we're not sure how that'll be, but that's the idea. So it's the concept will be taken to the schools, and they will create the design.
Through you, Deputy Mayor and Chair, I might just add to that the team has been working with our public art group as well to make sure that any opportunities for community engagement is aligned with existing council procedures and policies and learnings that we've had from the past as well.
I thank you for that. I would really despair, so I'm sure it won't happen, that we go through this art challenge, we have a winning design, and I just would not like to see that winning design filed anywhere. So taking that through with our art team to fruition in some way, shape or form would be really important. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hughes, and thank you, officers. Councillor Gollo.
Thanks. Mr. Chair.
Against Chair.
Through you. Just a question to officers. First of all, thanks very much for all your hard work that you do. I know that you work with the community groups quite diligently and achieve the results. How are you actually picking the candidate areas? How are you picking those sites? What makes them an area to set up and start in? I ask this because since the last storms that we had here in the Redlands, there's quite a lot of koalas on the move in Thornlands. And even the mayor made comment yesterday that there's now been koalas or a koala sighted at Indigiscapes. So how are we actually picking the sites? But what's next? How far do you want to go? That's why I said that Thornlands has a lot of sightings, there's a lot of markings on trees, as was discovered in a previous general meeting from another report. So how do we get some action in Thornlands, especially now that we've had a lot of tree planting there? It seems to be a lot of moving. So how do we track some koalas in Thornlands, basically?
I might start to address that question and let Catherine and Pippa jump in where they see fit. You might note in the report that we mentioned the work that we've been doing with Griffith University, and I think a lot of the information you've already heard is about evidence-based and about science behind it. So this is a trial opportunity, and it's really looking at spots where we think we'll have the greatest ability to be able to test trial and get some great impact. Anything you want to add?
Just to clarify, the areas that will be selected will be based on science. So it'll be where once the data comes in and we can see where we have what is known as source populations, that's where we'll be concentrating our efforts. So there'll be a combination of other criteria. It'll be the roads around there. It'll be whether those areas have sufficient supporting habitat and a link perhaps to our corridors plan. So there'll be a number of criteria, which is what Ormiston was based on, that will have to be fulfilled before one of those areas is selected as another candidate area.
Are you finished, Councillor Scollo?
Thanks, Mr.
Councillor
Chair.
Mitchell.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Certainly supportive of the positive direction we're moving forward, and it's a tough challenge. I think we should all be proud of ourselves, what we've done in policy positions and supporting things. So the way forward I'm hearing is great. Yeah, science, disease research, replanting street trees, our parks, corridors, positive actions, community education, better animal control, urban design methods, partnerships, data, science. All that's wonderful, challenging, but that is the way forward. So my appeal, I've never seen a koala eat heightened emotion. I've never seen a koala eat a divided community or live in one. So I think the maturity of the conversation is something that will help to save not just the koala, but the environment of this area as well. So I think if we can all stay focused on all those things that, those productive, factual, cooperative things that are really going to make those long-term changes and short-term changes, and dial down a little bit what happens every single time in the community in this room, whenever the koala comes up, the emotion, the division, the fact that people feel they need to retreat into camps doesn't help. So the appeal is, Let's stay focused on all the positives, and that wasn't a comment on us as individuals. It's just across the community. Just if we can stay focused on those positive, productive things, and dial down on the emotion, because it is an emotional discussion. That would be my appeal. So thanks for the officers, and look forward to moving forward.
Thank you, Councillor Mitch. Before we go to Councillor McGlory this time, I will say that on the weekend, a few of us can. Myself, I was lucky enough to represent the Mayor at the Redlands After Hours Wildlife Ambulance, and I know the work that they've done has also contributed to some of the data that we're seeing in this report. So 20 years, so wonderful service. I'll go back to Councillor McGlory to sum up, please.
I was speaking against, Chair.
Sorry, Councillor Gleeson was not to speak. Sorry, Paul. Councillor Gleeson, sorry.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I'll be voting against it. I don't think there's anywhere near enough work towards vaccinations and curing the koala disease. And the fact is that koala can't breed when they're diseased. And I think that's where we should be putting all our effort into. Until then, really all we're doing is targeting urban development and putting a kibosh on that. It's really just a political message we're putting out there. I don't think we're doing enough to actually save the koala.
Thank you, Councillor Gleeson. Everyone was tilting their head sideways to hear that. Now I'll go back to Councillor Glory.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Can I just brief? I'm sorry.
No, both I'd like this.
I know, but the Mayor committed to planting 1 million trees. Yep, if that's not making an effort.
Councillor Glory, please sum up.
Thank you. Can I just ask the two officers again to introduce themselves, because I'm very aware that... that resident of mine who was in here the other day said they never know who the officers are when they come up, and just your titles or... Thank you.
Pippa Donaldson, Service Manager for Environment and Education.
Thank you.
Catherine Dexter, Koala Conservation Officer.
Thank you. I just asked because I know she's actually started watching it on the internet now that she's come in here, so I'll be in trouble. See, I've asked, so I'll get off the hook now. Thank you for that. I think you can tell that there has been a great concern, not just over the last 6 years, but Long before I was even in council, there's been a concern, I think, for the koalas in Redlands. And I think with advancing technology and increased data, like we've all said, we're so getting on the mark now to actually get those facts and figures. And as Councillor Bishop alluded to, there's the facts are actually showing more hope than what perhaps we thought in the past. This is just for transparency and accountability. We have actually adopted the strategy. So this is just to let the community know how far we're going and what's happening. And the two officers that are sitting here that have had input into this plan, I've spoken to them over the months and I know their background. And they know a lot more than probably anybody else sitting in this room on koalas, and they've got the not just past work experience, but the skills and the degrees to prove that. So if they're saying this is the right time frame and we're going to target, I'm going to back their advice on that one. And the koala is a motive. You've just got to put a koala photo on your Facebook and you get more likes and everything in that evening than you would if you put something up on the budget. And I think that is a good... I'm sorry, Deb. And I think that's a great point, though, because that is the Redlands community and it is that passion and that dedication and that energy that has kept the koala here for this long. Councillor Elliott and Lance and Councillor Hughes and Councillor Bishop and I went out to the wildlife ambulance and Councillor Elliott was actually here 20 years ago when that went through council, and some of those same people were there on Saturday that were there 20 years ago still doing the ambulance. So I think voluntarily, yeah, and getting up what, four times or five times a night, one lady told me, it's like having a baby. It was just amazing, their passion. So I agree that it can get very passionate, but I think that passion has actually kept the koala here. So, but in this room, we've now got all the science to back that passion, and I think those volunteers are going to be really rejoicing when they read this report, because I think it does give us hope. Also, years ago, I just tried to bring it up on my internet then to read how they're going. I drove down to Gunnedah. I know it's not probably the most exciting holiday destination, but I drove down there in 2010 because they said they were the koala capital. So I actually just wanted to see, you know, what they did. And outside their tourist information centre, which was loaded with everything from shot glasses with koalas to your typical tea towels with koalas. They had everything koalas. They had four RV vans parked outside, and within walking distance of the tourist information centre, there was only about six trees, gum trees, and they couldn't find me a koala at all. And yet, using that title, the world's koala capital, they're getting so much tourism. And that's something else that we have to think about. With the koalas, people are coming here. They're actually helping our economy more than we probably realise. So if we need a financial incentive, there's certainly one there as well. I'd actually like to throw a friendly glove down to Gunnedah and get the name up here as we being the koala capital, and just see how that helps us with two international airports within half an hour away. Even when Oprah Winfrey came out, she was standing down in Sydney. I always remember I turned on the TV there, she's with a koala, and she said, I can go home now, I've cuddled a koala. So, yeah, the strength of saving our wildlife, I think, is a moral responsibility of every council as we come through, but it's for future generations. But it's also something that... it actually helps our region with tourism, and I think if we can throw down that gauntlet, put that in your action plan, I think that might stir up a bit of activity for Redlands. So once again, I just want to say thank you to the officers. This is a really good, transparent report, and anyone picking this up, and I know there'll be a lot of those passionate koala people out there actually doing that, and they'll be able to keep track of what's going on and given hope as... you know, Councillor Bishop mentioned. So thank you. And with that, I put the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Glory. Those in favour? Those against?
Against.
Okay. In favour again, please. OK, Councillor Baglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Hewlett, those against, Councillor Telty and Councillor Gleeson. Thank you. On to the next item, 13.4. Could I have a mover, please? Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Delighted to move item 13.4, State Government's Koala Expert Panel Recommendations. Thank you.
Seconded by Councillor Bishop. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Hughes?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. The report took some reading and a very fine print, but I think that we can all just focus on the six table recommendations, table one which with the six recommendations. Thank you.
Councillor Bishop?
Yeah, just acknowledging that the koala is protected under the state regulatory planning provisions, so it's absolutely critical that we support their recommendations or the expert panel's recommendations just to the state. And as Councillor Bavara was suggesting before, if there are opportunities for us, I think we would want to make sure that we do that. So thanks very much.
Councillor Bavara?
This is another report, and I think the Koala Expert Panel that a lot of the passionate people have been following as well, including myself, and I'm glad to see it here today. I did have that one reservation in the recommendation. It says resolve to note. I don't like that word note because I've been caught out previously when things are just for noting that they actually don't hold any strength. But I just wanted to be reassured again, if I can have it clarified here publicly, that it can just be for noting because the resolution when we adopted our strategy says that any recommendations or actions out of this report that we can use, the officers do have that strength to pull it up to use. Can I just have that clarified, please?
Thank you, Councillor Baglari. Through you, Deputy Chair, Deputy Mayor and Chair. Yes, I can confirm that, and I'm happy for the officers sitting beside me to acknowledge that or confirm as well. A lot of the outcomes are still fairly much unknown. We're meeting the resolution that we said we would look at the Koala Expert Panel and bring information back. We're providing that entire report in the state's response so that council and the community has that visibility. But once the outcomes are known, if there's any items that we need to change in our planning, we'll certainly bring that back in a report. But at this point, we're seeing the work is aligning very closely with, as you said, the very expert work that the officers are doing by very capable and knowledgeable officers. Pippa, Catherine, any variation for your... Thank you, Councillor Baglari. We appreciate the question.
Yeah, thank you. Once bitten, twice shy with that word note, that was all, because it was a report that I wanted something to happen from and it never did, so I'm always wary of that word. On page 251, I did read the key recommendations. They really align with what your action plan and our strategy is doing, so I think you guys are on top of it. And page 264, Habitat Loss and Planning Framework, I'm glad that they're actually addressing that. And the words simplified and consistent approach, strategic and effective habitat protection. I just think they're basic words and are what we all know needs to have happened over the years, a consistent approach to it. And I look forward to hearing more from the officers as to how this can flow into our action plans once it's all dotted and ticked. So thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Baglari and officers. Is there any other further questions or comments? Councillor Telty.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, whilst I'm not speaking against this report, and I will support it being noted because the state government report is important to our planning and consideration, I note in the report, and again, the proposed delivery of the new statewide koala conservation strategy within 12 months, so it's proposed, we don't know that it's going to go ahead, it is anticipated, again, we don't know what's going on, to provide the necessary path forward for all relevant stakeholders to work in collaboration to address the decline of koalas across the southeast of Queensland. This is a regional approach, and I think it's very early for us to be
making broad statements about how we will respond to something that we don't know enough about. We don't know what we don't know. The government's response outlines that the state will play a central role in the koala conservation with the introduction of conservation prioritisation areas and a more coordinated approach to koala conservation that will include partnerships with a variety of stakeholders, including relevant local governments. So what those partnerships entail, including whether there will be funding available for local koala conservation programs, remains undefined. So this is really, you know, it's a lot of hollow work, unfortunately. We don't know what we don't know, and until we do, we can note it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Talty. I think I'll go back to Councillor Hughes to sum up if you wish to.
Through you to the officers, can I just ask exactly what Councillor Talty said, clarification on that, because I know in my reply that I got from Graham Simpson yesterday, he actually said that you are actually reading through this seeking clarification. I presume that's exactly what Councillor Talty was saying, that's exactly what you're doing.
Thank you for your question. That's exactly right. We noted exactly what you've considered as well, and so we are using our connections and other sort of officer-based level to be able to try and determine what those clarifications may be, and also work with they are developing the Koala Steering Committee, so being able to have an input or work on the other committees that will be supporting that.
So when you said before you'll come back to us, that's what you'll come back to us on once you've got all that clarification. Yep. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Councillor Gollay?
Sorry, when you said work with, does that mean that individual councils will actually be able to have a representative sit on that expert panel as in an advisory position, or is it solely going to be state government experts flicking the work back to council to do anyway? I understand it's a state panel, but will they be relying solely on our information and acting in a governance aspect to flick it straight back to council to deal with anyway?
It's undefined at this point in time. We are still trying to work out exactly who is going to be on that advisory committee. We have very much expressed interest to be involved, whether either on the advisory committee or within the supporting committees that provide advice and information to.
Officers actually within their expert field sitting on those advisory panels being chaired by a state agency.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Chair. Just to assist with that, it's not Council's call in terms of who sits on that advisory panel. That's why we're watching with interest what is happening. We have our planning, we have our program, we've got our strategy, our action plans, but we'll certainly be looking at providing as much advocacy and support to the work that's being done and bringing back any gems. We're hoping they'll come up with something wonderful that we can then go, yes, there's something. But we're certainly, the officers are maintaining a very close watch on the work that's been done as they have for, you know, since this started.
Yeah, thanks for that. I fully understand that we don't have a say in who's going to sit on this alleged expert panel. I'm just merely suggesting that it'd be great if someone from our council actually sat there in an advisory position on the panel.
Okay, Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. In my summing up, I also had taken notes on my first reading of the report, and I was looking to the advocacy role as well, and had jotted down notes, so Councillor Boglari had sought clarification on that, and I thank the officers for that. In speaking to the motion, I was going to ask the developed targeted and high-quality koala habitat mapping.
I don't think we're asking mapping. Any more questions, we're just about moving
the motion. I said I was going to ask, yes, which I didn't, my bad. However, I just note that with on table one with the key recommendations, number six, the mapping, and I was going to, in my summing up, point out how vital that correct mapping is on all fronts. Our Koala Action Group has reiterated many times to us how important to get the mapping right. So item number 6 on this table is of real importance to us. Thank you. And with that, I move and commend the Officer's recommendation that Council resolves to note this report on the Queensland Government's Koala Expert Panel report recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillors. Those in favour? Councillor Gleeson?
Aye.
Carried unanimously. Thank you. Thank you, Councillors. On item 13.5, could I have a mover, please? 13.5. Councillor Bagari. Thank you.
I move 13.5, Redlands City Plan Planning Scheme Policies.
Second for that motion, please. Councillor Elliott, would you like to speak to it? Councillor McGlurry.
I was going to. I didn't know I was going to be moving it, that's all. So that I can still do that. So we have a city plan, and then we have policies that are used as a guideline for people when they put in their applications. And this particular policy is to do with the environmental significance overlay. So in the new city plan, the clearing...
It covers a range of issues. Not
well, this is one of them that I was talking to. Well, I explained what a policy was to begin with, and then this is one of them.
Okay, but you said that you were talking about one. I thought it was a range.
No. Well, I'll try to make myself clear by initially saying a policy is there as a guideline for the city plan, and one of them is the environmental significant one here today. Just as an example, there are others there. They're much more technical ones, which I will leave up to our engineers to get correct. In the new city plan, we changed the clearing amounts. With a house now in the rural zone, up to 500 is fine. 500 to 2,500 square metres is self-assessable. So in that regard, those people would then have to refer to the policy. I don't actually agree with that being self-assessable and it needs to be strengthened. But that's not the argument here for today. That will be when we have our amendments coming through in October. So the intent by the policies is actually to help people putting in DAs to make it clearer for them and to give them these guidelines to assist them. So that's what we're doing here today, is we're getting the policies to go into the new city plan.
Any speakers against? Comments, questions, or... Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I have a couple. First, I'll go to a comment, and my comment is in relation to the submission review, and I note that we had three issues. On page 315.3 was the replanting species. I previously raised my concern that the list looked very light on, for want of a better word, with three trees and two shrubs. I understand that it's advice only, but in the wording, when you look at it, it looks like that's the three trees and two shrubs. So I'm just noting that it was picked up, obviously, by those that have put in submissions, and again, we have just said, literally, our response has been that is at the table. So there's been no change to that, and I'm pretty disappointed about that. That's my personal point, so that's just my comment. Regarding questions, Appendix B is the tree species list, and that's on page 424. When you actually go to page 424, which is a fair way down, I'd just like to note for those that are reading this or looking at this, that it's been a formatting issue with the way we've been given this report. On the electronic version, I understand it is correct that it is labelled Appendix B, and that you can actually get correct headings, because trees, we talk about koalas and we talk about trees, that they're very, very keenly watched and sought by our residents. So when you go to this table, it will be correct online. And unfortunately for those looking at it in print version, it's just simply a formatting issue. Exactly. When we go to, sorry, excuse me, Deputy Mayor, that, on that one, that is my my noting. Sorry, my question will come up on the next report. Thank you.
Being any further questions or comments? Councillor McGlary, would you like to sum up?
Oh, in summing up, I'll just provide some clarity on Councillor Hughes's question, because I had actually asked that of officers myself yesterday. So if I just read from the email, it's probably make sure I get the wording correct. Recognising a planning scheme policy can only provide guidance, and that a landholder clearing within the above thresholds, which is that 500 to 2,500 square metres I talked about previously, will not be required to lodge an application. The planning scheme policy was drafted to be as simple as possible, limiting the type of species that could be used for replanting to species that are readily available from nurseries and common to all regional ecosystems across the city. The policy also seeks to provide guidance on the density of planting and the percentage of mixed trees, shrubs and ground covers to be provided. So it's a simple guidance, and they thought that was sufficient to enable a landholder to satisfy themselves that they had undertaken the necessary compensatory planting with the correct species to require an acceptable outcome. So they've tried to make it as clear and as specific as they can to help the landowners when they want to do that clearing, so that they do require meet those acceptable outcomes. But like I said before, there are wildlife corridors and everything in these areas, but that's not the debate for today. So on that, I'll put the motion.
Thank you. Those in favour? Councillor Gleeson?
Aye.
Carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. On to 13.6. Do I have a mover for item 13.6, please? Councillor Mitchell? Let you speak. Sorry, you can speak first. Sorry.
Yes, move item 13.6, the Multiple Dwelling Design Guide.
Can I have a seconder, please? Councillor Talty? Thank you. You'd like to speak to it, Councillor Mitchell?
This design guide, its intention is to help us develop some really high quality medium density development in the city. It's meant to accompany the city plan. It's certainly been well received generally by councillors and anecdotally by the planners and out into the industry in its draft form. Certainly important to me personally around the whole city, particularly around the Cleveland area here in the CBD, where we are zoned for a reasonable amount of medium density living. To me, it's all about the livability of the area. And so while these aren't legislated guides, let's hope that over time these tenets of design will seep into the DNA of our builders and our planners and people that are purchasing property, so we get a great high-quality product as an expectation, as a rule. Some of the things designed built into this design guide are things around the street presence, built form of the building, the articulation, solar penetration, ventilation, open space, landscaping, access and parking, including active transport, bicycle parking, etc., and servicing, so the normal services that come through. It can't be all things to everyone. There's other like energy efficiency elements that might be more of a building code matter, but I think it's a terrific document, will be regularly reviewed, and as it should be. So I think it's going to be very positive for our area.
Thank you, Councillor Mitchell. Any Councillor Talty? Any speakers against the report? Take a comment from Councillor Talty. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to really congratulate and thank the officers for the work that they've done on this report. One of the things that frustrates councillors and the community frequently when we have large unit development applications coming through is that they meet all of the basic requirements of the regulation, but in layman's terms, they're god ugly. And we're hoping that the development industry we're hoping that the development industry will take this up and recognise that these are
this is done in a spirit of helping to make our community more attractive and to help people feel more at home in our community. Many, many years ago, when I was young, and we were a shire, a country shire, we had a role in the council who was known as the shire engineer, and the shire engineer from back in the day had a significant influence over the way that the city looked and the way the city progressed over time. And a lot of the good things that we like about the city can be connected back to past shire engineers. And I think that the work that the officers have done in providing this design guide will be something that decades forward they can stand back and say, well, I contributed to making the city look better in my role. So this is a good thing. I hope the development industry will take heed of it. And thank you very much to the officers.
Thank you, Councillor Telfy. Councillor Bishop.
Yeah, thank you. Absolutely, I support the desire to have a look and feel for a city that we all take such pride in. And I know that the development industry, as much as the residents and council, all will benefit from that. And so we do ask those who are planning for multiple dwelling in the city to really consider this. Word back from Brisbane City Council when they saw this document, apparently through our CEO, was that they wish they had one that was something like this. They held it up as an extraordinary example. And so that's even before we've adopted it. Wait until we see what happens when we adopt it. One thing that I did raise in discussion, and I was grateful to hear officers, Councillor Mitchell alluded to it a moment ago. This is very much about the look, and as Councillor Tolte said, sometimes in the past people's buildings' rear faces the street. So this is trying to make it a bit more articulated and beautiful in terms of amenity. My question relates to the people living inside the dwellings. And energy efficiency is really critical because the design, the function, the Queensland Building Code does not go into a great deal of detail about the way people need to design the insulation and all of those sorts of things. And I think there's a missed opportunity in this to talk up the importance of that for the sake of residents, because when that work is done, things along the lines of the Green Star rating, the energy efficiency and those sorts of other things that make living inside these dwellings important, if without that being articulated and delivered, it can really leave an impact on the residents inside. One of the things that was raised was that it might be a bit more that we could do in the raising awareness yesterday. Can I just ask if we can just have the officers, because they did mention that there might be a bit more stepping forward that we could do in that space, and I just think it's important that as a council, while we are not impelling developers to do this, but if we can encourage some of this, if we could just get a bit of an update on that, it'd be very helpful.
Thank you, Louise.
Yeah, thank you through you to David Jean. Yep. I suppose that's a question to David.
Thank you, Chair. I'll assist to address that while David's coming to the table, Councillor Bishop. But we certainly have a green living policy as well that is all about advocacy to the state that we can also look at in terms of building codes and making sure that the green living concept is something that's part and parcel of our city. But David, you're here now, so if you've got any comment you'd like to make in addition.
Thank you. Through the chair to Councillor Bishop. If we reflect on the purpose for this document, it's designed to help support city plan in terms of design for medium density residential development. So it's really a planning document. The matters that you're raising are building matters, and the Planning Act is quite clear that a planning scheme cannot deal with building matters unless the Act says it can. So in our view, this document is not the document to deal with those matters in terms of advocacy and the like. As Louise alluded to, we do have a green living policy, which is around energy efficiency, and that's possibly an opportunity for council to make clear its position in terms of those matters and advocate for changes to building regulations as you see fit.
I just think whatever we can do to raise that as an awareness when developers are looking at a multiple dwelling, that's when they should consider it. So while I appreciate this is related to city plan, it's when they look at this document, if they've got that information all in one, whatever we can do to add to that would be very important for the residents who will ultimately live inside these dwellings. Thanks.
And Councillor Elliott, I believe, was next. Councillor Hughes, sorry.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I was also going to seek some officers' clarification and update on speaking with David yesterday. He was very eloquent. My question regarding the background report here, it's two respondents completed the survey and two submitted responses separately. And I looked at the number of two, and I asked why that was or why that could be. We've got a very engaged community here, and when we do go to public consultation or seek some feedback, we're usually swamped. So I thought the number two was very, very low, and I seek some clarification on your thoughts on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hughes, for the question through the chair. So the brief discussion we had yesterday was around, in consultation generally, particularly on planning consultation, we tend to receive submissions when people aren't in favour of things, when they're unhappy with things. Two submissions on this particular design guide would seem to suggest that people think it's something which is positive, therefore they don't need to make a submission. The submissions we received were really looking at what can we do to improve it further, not suggesting that it was a bad idea.
Thank you very much for that. Now and further, and then in the when you go to the submission summary, it was really interesting. The first issue, questioning the need for more multiple dwellings in the city, and I thought, what? We're still trying to get as many developments as high as we jolly well can, and I was delighted to quickly go to the column to see the recommended change, no change. Thank you, tick. I was happy with that. Going over three pages, well, I think we've just missed an amend on the reference to colour and material palette could also include letterboxes, and we've agreed, so I think we just need to add the word amend into that top box there. And then on page 602, communal open space should primarily be usable, and suggesting it has to be central and at ground level doesn't necessarily achieve this. And then we went over to amend, and I thought, oh, what are we amending? So I would like to speak to that. Thank you. We've amended the text, and we've added communal open space should be positioned in an accessible location, which can be on rooftops, on podiums, or at ground with passive surveillance. So we've amended that, but what it didn't show was what we had amended from. So I had asked for follow-up, and I thank you, David, for that response. We had originally said communal open space should be positioned in a central location with passive surveillance. So we've now added and agreed with rooftop and podium level. David, would you like to speak to that? Thank you, why we did make that amendment, please.
Thank you, Councillor Hughes. So, yeah, you're quite right. When the design guide was first drafted to go to consultation, it referred to communal open space being at ground level. The submissions made the point that, really, communal open space doesn't necessarily have to be at ground level. It could be podium or rooftop. We looked at that submission. We looked at city plan as it was drafted in terms of the code, and the code already made clear that it could be in various locations. So we amended the design guide, or recommend amending the design guide to align with city plan as currently drafted.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I appreciate the opportunity to ask those finer questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Hughes. Councillor Elliott.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, it's timely, this, We've proved it ourselves as a council. We did the recent development that was completed at the end of June in Oakland Street. We specifically built three-bedroom and four-bedroom units of quality design and quality level of infrastructure inside them and things like that. The four bedroom one sold first. So there's definitely a market for a higher racing. Just the two bedroom punch, fine. You've got to have those, but certainly we've proved it as a council that you can build quality units. They do sell and they sell well. So as they were putting in the last, rolling the grass out, putting the last plants in, stuff like that, people were moving in, and I think we settled within a week after the end of the financial year. It was done and dusted, all units were sold. So if you do it right, they do sell.
Thank you, Councillor Elliott. Any further questions or comments? Councillor Golay?
Sorry, just a very quick question. It's quite generic. Through the chair to you, David. Does Redland City Council invite developers to come and build in the area, or does Redland City Council simply assess what's allowable within a zoned piece of area? Put some context around that. I'm asking because the general assumption by the general public and the media is that we somehow invite developers to come and build, and we tell developers what they can build on a particular piece of ground.
I don't think that's really relevant to the report that's at hand, personally. So.
Well, I think it's relevant because some of the comments I've just heard now, whilst I agree with them, we don't invite developers to come and build.
This is about the design of multi.
I understand that, but some of the comments that were made,
development in the city as a whole, it's about the actual multi.
Yeah, I understand that. But some of the comments that were made gave the assumption that we're inviting developers to come
in. I'm not going to allow the question, so we'll move on to the next speaker, Councillor Baglari.
Thank you. I'd just like to thank the officers for this, because when developers do come in for preliminary discussions or throughout the discussions you might have with them, and you try and politely say words like, you know, it's plain or yuck or something, they take offence, whereas now I can just... Now you can just show them this, and because I always talk to them about a Redland standard, and they will show you something they've built somewhere else in North Lakes or Yarrabilba or something, and you just politely push it aside and go, no, this is Redlands and we have a standard. And as Councillor Elliott just said, the units of the highest standard, they sell in Redlands. You know, people want to have livability down here. And so now we can actually don't have to try and be diplomatic. We can just put this in front of them. And so this is a Redland standard and what we expect. So it might help them get achieve better outcomes, I hope, for our residents. So I just want to thank the officers for helping us. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Baglari. I'll add that it's very important because in the new city plan, I believe that we removed the density from the medium MDR zone, which will hopefully, the design will have an impact rather more so than the density of the actual lot itself. So, Councillor Bishop?
Yeah, just as we go forward, part of building the interest from the development community might be to actually profile some examples as this document will hopefully continue to be a living document. When we get ones that have got a big rubber stamp that are looking fantastic, can we actually include them and give them as an examples? I'm sure that will be something that officers will do, but I just think as a rolling thing going forward that the sorts of things that meet with the community's interest, I think would be a useful way of showing that we are profiling those sorts of things and encouraging that.
Yes, and there's plenty of examples through the city of that too. I'll go back down to Councillor Mitchell to sum up.
Thank you. This document's not going to be a panacea for everything, but I think when our developers, whether it's mum and dad or whether it's a bigger mob, come in a spirit of cooperation with our planners, and I see that more and more, I think it's a trend moving forward. There is a lot more cooperation. They've now got something to look at, and I think that's a great thing. It says it's not a panacea, and certainly some of those other building matters that we might advocate for around green living, so we can all work on that. But we do look forward to a higher quality finishes. We do look forward to a great-looking city, and we do look forward to a more livable city with, at the end of the day, it's the human beings that live here that make a city, and we want them to be comfortable both inside and outside their buildings. Thanks.
As in favour, just again, sorry, Councillor Gleeson.
Let's go. Aye.
Carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Moving on to 13.1, 7. Could I have a mover for that, please? Move Councillor Bishop.
Yes, just moving 13.7 Transport Noise Corridor Project.
A seconder for that motion, please, Councillor Edwards. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Bishop?
Briefly, this is a report just outlining a summary of the process for designating local roads within Redland City and to provide information for the modelling generated by the noise from particularly roads. One of the things I think is important about this is that we generally apply a standardised distance from road corridors that's to be included, and this has ground truth the areas across the city and allowed places that were otherwise previously required to build to a higher level of construction, and sometimes with costs that were not necessarily related to the actual noise from the road. So I think that's been quite useful. One point that I did raise yesterday, and I'd just like to touch base with the officers, if I may, was that when a road, engineers love straight lines, but road noise does change along a road corridor, and when we get to intersections, particularly where there's more noise, I wonder whether there is an opportunity for us to stick with that wider parameter and just let people around that broader area know that they might wish to consider whether they need to do higher construction levels because they might be facing slightly more noise than what is designated. So question through you to, through the chair to an officer in relation to that. Would there be any value in allowing certain people in areas around intersections to have access to information about that?
I think there would be access through overlays on the... But can you answer that, David, or you?
Thank you, Chair. Through you to Councillor Bishop. So what we've done through this project is to really provide Council with an evidence base as to what's required to deal with noise nuisance on the local road network. It could be fair to say that there may be some who aren't captured within the areas that we suggest should be regulated who may still consider themselves to be impacted by noise. Certainly we could make information available to the public generally on dealing with noise in close proximity to the road network, even in circumstances where they're not captured on a regulatory basis. But it would be for information and for guidance only and for their consideration in building future dwellings.
Councillor Edwards.
I support this report. There's nothing stopping anybody from adding any acoustic controls to their buildings. You know, they've got that. But if you have, for example, doing double glazing windows, it's very expensive and adds significantly to properties, particularly if you don't need it. So this is based on fact. So if you don't acquire it, you don't have to build it. But of course, there's nothing stopping anybody to add extra acoustics, and there's information available to them. I think it's a good report. I'm going to support it, and I think it gives a bit of clarification around where noise areas are. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Edwards. Any other speakers at all? Councillor Hughes?
I struggled with this report. I looked at it initially, and I'm pleased that David's here to strengthen all that has been said. And my initial thoughts are that the we've just cut and halved, reduced the impact to developers that they'd need to do this sound mitigation on many of the dwellings and the homes that are being built. So my initial thought was, I read this report and the developer comes along, puts the homes in on the first main road next to the road, and does now not need to put in any of these mitigations, and it's a cheaper home and we've saved them a lot of money. Then the residents move in and look 6 months later or 3 months later or 2 weeks later, they're saying, hang on a minute, we've got noise problems here. This home is really unlivable. So that was my initial concern. So, again, I'm speaking with David and David Jeans. He has reiterated to me that the science that has been used, the buffering that is in existence, Councillor Elliott also shared with me. So I think that this is a good news story. I really did not read it well the first time, and I appreciate the backup. So, David, could you just explain again to us the category 1, 2, 3, 4, when initially is with setbacks there was 29, and then modelling went to 0, and then percentage dropped 100%. Again, just looking at that, you think, oh, what? And yesterday it was okay. Today, if we adopt this report, you don't need to throw it out.
Thank you, David. Happy to respond to that question. So in looking at this, I think we need to step back to 2014 and what we had in the planning scheme at the time. So prior to 2014, anybody who wanted to construct a dwelling house that was captured by the road and rail noise overlay had to lodge a material change of use application. They had to undertake an acoustic assessment for a dwelling house. And that added thousands of dollars to the cost of building a house, not in terms of additional acoustic measures, but simply on an application and a report, so just the process. So the council of the day in 2014 took an approach where they said, well, we would prefer to deal with this as a building matter as opposed to a planning matter to try and reduce that regulation. To do that, we have to designate transport noise corridors to apply through the building process. To designate a transport noise corridor, we have to use, initially at least, the state's modelling, so DTMR, Department of Transport and Main Roads modelling. When we ran that modelling, it's quite crude. It gave us a number of properties which were captured, and that's what you see in Table 2 in the report. What that modelling doesn't take into account is acoustic protection that's already provided by things like acoustic fences and existing buildings. So we went a step further in our project to build upon the state's modelling and introduce those elements that were already there that provided protection. When you factor in those matters, it reduced the number of properties that were triggered. So from a more detailed assessment modelling, we're comfortable that the number of properties captured are now only those that need additional regulation.
Thank you, David. That's a good explanation. Councillor Elliott.
Yeah, I can remember when this first was presented, and I gave a case of a resident bought a block off Island Outlook across the road, off on the main road it was. But there was this massive big brick house there, the 70s style huge big house. Right behind it was a 6-foot close boarded fence right across, and right next to that was a vacant block, and they were captured in that, you know. And when they saw the cost, they sold the block. They actually said, we're not going to go through this, you know. And this is great. This is the fine tuning done here to reduce the number of properties because of there's physical structures in front of you to reduce. This is great. To have a 50% reduction in the number of properties affected and for no reason at all, it wasn't going to change their lives, what they were going to do. They already probably had that noise component there. No further window reduction would help. So I'm really comfortable with this. I think it's been great research. I know the modelling was crude to start with, but this is a great outcome.
Thank you, Councillor Elliott. Any other speakers? I have to admit, the only noise complaint I've had in my 6 years as councillor has been dogs, so, and washing machines. I haven't had road noise one yet, but I'll turn back to you, Councillor Bishop, to sum up.
Yeah, just summing up, I think it's worth noting that this report, while it does affect a number of properties across the city adjoining road corridors, it's not retrospective. It only affects new buildings and new dwellings. So it will be a benefit to most people. Anyone who does do a building near a road, think about the acoustics, and for your own sake and for the sake of those who are going to be living in it, happy to put the motion.
Okay. All those in favour? Councillor Gleeson?
Aye.
That's carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Item 13.8, could I have a mover, please? Move Councillor McGlurry.
Happy to move 13.8, City Plan Future Amendments to Fees and Charges.
Seconded by Councillor Mitchell. Thank you. I'd like to speak to it, Councillor Wendy. Sorry.
Oh, it's all in the background of the report.
Any speakers against? Certainly can, Councillor Talpy.
Sorry, I didn't notice this earlier in the looking at the reports. I noticed it early this morning. Just on page 649 on the schedule, oh, it's okay. I was reading a number which is hectares as dollars. It's fine. It's fine. Don't worry about it. Head's not clear today. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other speakers? Councillor Glurry, anything further?
No, I'll just put the motion. Thank you.
Those in favour? Councillor Griffin?
Aye.
Carried unanimously. Thank you. Item 13, sorry, back down to 14.1. So the mover, please. Councillor Baglari.
Happy to move 14.1, drinking water, no? Yeah, drinking water quality management plan annual report.
Thank you. Seconded, Councillor Edward. I'd like to speak to it, Councillor Baglari.
Yes, happy to speak to this one because it's probably the most important report we've got here today when you think of it. And I think the officers, Brad Taylor and his team, are probably unsung heroes that don't get enough praise, so I thought I'd do a bit of a job on them today because if we didn't have fresh water, we wouldn't have anything else. So when you look through the report on page 4, I think I've got, the various things that fresh water is, you can have suspected illness, you can have discoloured water, you can have taste and odour. So though people might naturally think about their water or be passionate about it like they are in other issues of the city, if any of those things popped up, we would certainly have 150,000 people. If we had an epidemic, you know, this can be absolutely catastrophic if they get this wrong. So on page 4, during 2017-18, there has been no confirmed cases of illness arising from our water supply. And the best news story was on page 1. The annual report states that drinking water supplied by Redland City Council achieved 100% compliance with the Australian drinking water guidelines for the parameters that were tested. So our water guys and girls are probably people that we don't often thank enough or think about. But if you want to flush your toilet or have a hot shower or have a cup of tea and be safe, which a lot of countries don't. If you've ever been to Bali, you suddenly come back here and you really appreciate fresh water. So I just wanted to say a big thank you to them and congratulations on your 100%.
Thank you, Councillor Bulgari. Any speakers or comments? Councillor Edwards?
Yeah, it's just a comment. It's just a bit of a shame that it's designed that we can't change it. It's a shame that we are using potable water for things like toilets and showers, and that's a waste of a resource. There's nothing we can do because you'd have to dig up the whole thing. So, you're right. There's few countries in the world you can go to and just turn on the tap and drink from it. So.
Thank you, Councillor Edwards. Any other speakers? Councillor Bishop?
Oh, yeah, you don't need to buy the bottled stuff. Just get a recycled thing and use the 100% endorsed Redland City Council water. It's the best you can get.
I think it's going to be Redland Coast Water once we get the printing on the bottles. So, back to you, Councillor Baglari.
Oh, I think everyone said it. We really do appreciate having fresh water, and when you look around other countries, it's a simple, simple thing, and they don't have it, and we take it for granted. So, I'd like to ask through the chair if John Oberhart wouldn't mind sending our thanks as acting CEO. To that team, because they don't get much recognition, but without them, there's 150,000 people who have got a risk of disease and illnesses. So thank you, and with that, I put the motion.
Thank you, Councillor. Those in favour? Councillor Gleeson?
Aye.
Carried unanimously. Thank you, Councillors. On to 14.2. Do I have a mover, please? Councillor Hughes?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Moving item 14.2, the sole supplier list. Thank you very much.
Seconded for that motion, Councillor Mitchell. would like to speak to it, Councillor Year.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. This is a list that comes to us yearly. I remember last year going over it with a fine-tooth comb. This year I was a little less. I had the bigger comb over it, just looking through the names. I understand that we need to use some specialised companies and equipment, and we've just heard how wonderful our water is 366 days of the year, and so I would be delighted just to go straight to the officer's recommendation if there's no comments.
Any speakers or comments?
Well, 365.
I'll put the motion, those in favour.
And then you get to live here. Yeah, we're not missing that leap year. Thank you.
Councillor Gleeson?
Oh, yeah, sorry, aye.
Yes, carried unanimously. Thank you, Councillor. Carried unanimously, sorry. Okay, we move on to, there's no mayoral minute. We certainly have no notice of motion. No urgent business without notice. No confidential items. Looking good. So I can declare...
we've got nothing.
I declare the meeting closed at 12:11. PM. Thank you, councillors. Thank you, okay. Officers, for answering all those questions.
Thank you.